And I'll call the House Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee to order. Today is May the 14th, 2015. And today we are having a very special committee meeting that I've been looking forward to for several months. The Rural Communities Committee, Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee obviously deals with land use and water, and we sort of know what that is. But the rural communities part is an interesting one because it's not clear exactly what bills that mean, what we might get dealing with rural communities. And at some point last fall, I started thinking about the role of our tribes in lots and lots of rural communities as the major employer, as the fabric of some of these communities. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to get sort of a state of the tribes and how the councils or the chair people or whoever we could get to come talk from the tribes about the health of their tribes, and therefore a lot of the rural communities is going. And so we tried to time it up with a day when folks might be here anyway, so we weren't asking too much time away from other portions of your lives. And I sure appreciate the fact that I think it's been a couple days now, or at the end of a couple days, and so being willing to stick around a little longer and talk with us is very much appreciated. And I am hoping that this is, if it's of use and of interest to the tribes, this would be the first of many of these kinds of sessions. Because while I know there certainly is the commission as a venue and a vehicle to have a government-to-government conversation, the legislative body is often different and from our executive branch and doesn't have the same exact negotiating authority, but we often weigh in on policies that affect the tribes in ways that the commission probably wishes we either wouldn't or at least were better advised when we did it. And in particular, there was a bill I worked on in 2009 where I did get to work very closely with the Warm Springs and ended up, through discussions with them, putting a formal role into state law for the Council of the Warm Springs to weigh in on future actions in that part of the world. And it was a little unusual. I think maybe the first time something like that had even been done in any state. But that kind of collaboration, or at least advisement and discussion, isn't that common between the legislature and the tribal nations. It's obviously more of a federal government, nation to nation kind of relationship, but the state government needs to think about that as well. And while I know that we will hear from a moment from the executive director of the Commission on Indian Services, I do think it's a good idea for the legislature to constantly have a reminder that these are partners in governance as well. So with that, why don't we stop my speeches? Anybody else can say anything now if they like. Otherwise, we can just get going, and then I think we'll have a lot of questions probably, because I think the goal for me at least is not only just to hear how things are going, but also what we can do to help. That's a to-do list at the end of it that I'd like to have on things that the state legislature can do to be of use. So, with that, Karen, do you want to give us a little introduction, and then I've got somewhere between 8 or 9, depending on if we can find one tribal chair who's somewhere around the area, 8 or 9 folks to come up and talk afterwards.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Thank you. I may invite Chief John Ivey, who's going to be next up,
right,
to come up,
sure,
with me,
yeah, please.
So in the, yep, interest of time. For the record, my name is Karen Quigley, and I am the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. It is unique in that this is not an executive branch,
yeah, right, yeah,
commission, and I hope that you and your colleagues all know the resource that's available. And I think Oregon was very wise when Governor Atiyo was a legislator to put this in the legislative branch, because after all, what you are going to hear from are policymakers in tribal governments. So the fact that for 40 years we've had a body where legislators from tribal governments and state government could converse, I think has made Oregon a model nationwide. And it's certainly the reason why this is the first state in the nation that passed a government-to-government statute directing state agencies. So that's your legislative directive, and a lot of requirements with the idea of how many ways can you and your colleagues as legislators ensure that state agencies are communicating on all sorts of matters that you as policymakers decide that they should be doing. And I think the expertise that you have, you will find mirrored in your counterparts in tribal governments, who in addition have executive functions, so they sort of have a blended model for the most part. But they have an added responsibility of having to be responsible for tribal law and traditions and protecting the culture and heritage and history of their members in a way that you may do, but to a much, much smaller extent. With the added incentive for cooperation in that, of course, all the tribal members residing here in Oregon are Oregonians. And I appreciate very much your acknowledgement and understanding of how critical the growth and development of tribal governments have been in rural communities. And I think it would be wonderful if this were the first of many conversations. And I would venture a guess that many tribal leaders would hope that you come visit them in their tribal councils and you sit here and converse with them, or go to their traditional place of conversation, the plank house or the long house, and have all sorts of exchanges over so many areas that you share.
That sounds much more fun than being here, actually.
I'm sure it will be more
yes.
fun.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to be here. My name is Donald Ivey. I am the Coquel Tribal Council Chief. That's an elected position, and a primary function of my duties is to serve as an officer of the Tribal Council. And while my remarks are not prepared, I do want to say up front that I don't want to get too far into the weeds about what's happening in Coos Bay, North Bend, or with the Coquel Indian Tribe in particular, and more focus on my appreciation, and I think in the appreciation and certainly the curiosity of others about what might come of this initial meeting between tribes and this committee, talking about things that are certainly can be framed as statewide questions and concerns and considerations, but I think have some specificity to tribes, both in terms of how tribes function as governments and as sovereigns within the state of Oregon, but also how tribes function within the rural communities that they're part of. And I appreciate the comment and the acknowledgement that that tribes are recognized or becoming recognized as significant contributors to the economy of rural Oregon. And if there weren't 9 federally recognized tribes, there would not be an economy in rural Oregon, gentlemen. That's the truth. We are the significant contributors and drivers of the economy of all of and each of the rural communities that we reside in. And we are not apart from those communities. We are incorporated into them. We are insinuated into them. And we depend on those communities for the infrastructure to drive our own economies. And those communities depend on us for the jobs and the taxes and the services that we purchase locally, most of us. And so the question of and the idea to engage a conversation about rural communities and to engage that conversation in the context with tribes is a challenge for all of us. It will coming to the longhouse or coming to the plank house, certainly that's going to be a great way to have a conversation. But the conversation about tribes and about rural Oregon, we have to engage that larger community as well. There's specific sorts of things that we can talk about, and certainly this meeting today might provide an opportunity to look at some specific sorts of tribal-specific sorts of questions or perspectives or experiences. But certainly we have to ask ourselves some larger questions too. And as your committee thinks about land use, that's certainly one area where as the tribes try to grow their communities, grow their economies in the rural parts of the state where there are not a lot of resources at the government level. It's difficult sometimes for tribes to work themselves through the processes of a municipal government or county government or dealing with state regulators around questions of how do we manage the land use questions, how do we deal with opportunity, if you will, when many rural communities have a culture of waiting for the next big deal to come to town to solve the problem, the next guy on the white horse. Well, you gentlemen are the white horse, and we have to find some way to work together, I think, and to think about where the tribes are making contributions, where might tribes be able to make contributions, and where are those places of nexus, where are those vectors between the larger context of rural Oregon and land use and water rights and all those other sorts of things that we can fuss about, but really, where is the governmental infrastructure on the state side to help us work through this stuff? Tribes are willing and have demonstrated many, many times their willingness to step up and commit their resources to accomplish good things for themselves and the community. But oftentimes we're doing that in lieu of other folks being able to be there. So I think that's part of the conversation you might hear about today with respect to the Coquel Indian Tribe in particular. We are very proud to be able to operate in our ancestors' homelands. Those are homelands we share with the Confederated Coos Tribes and with the Confederated Tribes of Tsleil-Waututh Indians in terms of our history and our heritage. We share that with other people as well, but those are the two other tribes that we think about when we're doing business in that area, it's around cultural resources or land use planning, those sorts of things. And so that would be another place for us to think about is in making sure that as we engage ourselves in conversation, whatever it may be about, that we're not only talking to the right people, but we're talking to all the people. And I made some of those similar remarks this morning when I spoke to the House. That's one of the challenges, is to make sure that we're thinking about all the people. And oftentimes rural Oregon is characterized as that little town and that little place right there, when really that little town is serving a whole bunch of other folks, serving a whole bunch of other needs, if you will. So thank you again for the opportunity to engage a conversation. Coquel Tribe appreciates our opportunity to be here and make these remarks. We welcome you to our annual restoration celebration that occurs the last weekend of June. And by my saying to you that we're having it, and by my saying to you that you're welcome to attend, please, if you can, come to that part of rural Oregon anyway, and enjoy your afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'm logging that in my calendar. So next, I wanted to ask Eugene Austin Green, the tribal chair of the Warm Springs, to join us.
They just stepped out to feed the meter.
Oh, okay. All right. Rain Leno. And Dolores, would you like to join us?
I don't think Dave's here.
All right.
He's here.
And how about Gary Burke? Could you join us, sir? Thank you. So, it might be both Mr. Chairman, but Rain, would you?
Good afternoon, Chairman. Committee. I'd just like to thank you for your time. My name's Ren Lino. I'm a tribal chairman out at the Confederated Tribes of Grand Rounds, about 40 miles due west of here. I think this is a very important thing. I think this is a great thing. I've kind of been over here following. I think I'm beginning to learn this place over here. That might tell me I've been over here too much. But I agree with the gentleman before us. It'd be great for you to come out to our reservations and talk to us and actually see it. I think we do it with our community fund, which we've had a great response to, of people really seeing who we are, especially for Grand Round. They tend to think we're just the casino, you know, out there, but we were actually a timber tribe before we were ever a casino, and we like to explain to them our reservation was there since the 1850s, we're getting people to understand who we are past that casino is important for us. And of course, as legislators, we want you to understand that also. Some of the things that go on at Grand Ron, as the gentleman said, being out in a rural area, we're actually stuck right in the corner of four counties all coming together. So prior to the police bill that got passed, and fortunately we were able to start our police force, we were really having a lot of trouble. You know, you could call four different deputies, but it might take an hour. They might not turn up till the next day on issues. So it really created a tough issue for us. Now I believe we got eight officers, and it's very difficult, although it's a big piece of our sovereignty. That's why we did it. We also have built and paid for a fire station, but we don't run it. We have a MOU with our local fire station. So being out so far, and it's nice to have the traffic and on the busiest highway of the coast, but that also creates very tough safety situations for us out in that area. Some of the things, of course, I'd like to thank you for the Bill 348, because we've really been following the timber bill. I think that'll be great for all tribes to take a look at that. I think it both could be economical and an opportunity for tribes to recover land, which is very big for them. On the tribal police, I'd like to thank you for the Bill 343, which I believe was passed yesterday, that helped with some of that funding. So that was big for us. A couple of things that we do, we've got an MOU with the Department of Transportation with our TARO program, which we've only had our TARO program up and going for a couple years, but it's gave us a lot of opportunity for people outside the reservation, because everybody don't live on the reservation, to be able to go out and get a lot of jobs. That's really been a successful program with us. So I want to acknowledge the state for working with us. I just went over Monday with Congresswoman Bonamici to tour the Dundee bypass. That's very interesting. If anybody's been over to see that, that is a huge project. It's a lot bigger than what people really can imagine when you look at it. It'll be great, I think, for our community and anything in between here and Portland, I think. So, and of course, one of the best things, I think, acknowledging where we've gone, we started our curriculum believing that we need to teach our tribal kids the history of the Native Americans who lived in Oregon. We started our own curriculum about a year or two ago. We currently now work with the Salem-Keizer District, the Mooloolah District, the Dallas District, the Springfield and McMinnville with the fourth grade curriculum. We're starting next fall with eighth grade curriculum for both Willamina and Sheridan districts. We encourage any other tribes to reach, to go to our 6% fund. The funds are there. We think it's a great, it's not as expensive as what people thought. It's a simple folder you put in the history books. It tells the history of your tribe and your area. It's got great recognition. And as I said, in our 6% fund under the tribal side, that money is available if tribes want to put in for it. We think it really helps take care of the history. If people understand the history, then they have a lot more recognition for it. So other than that, we did get our own management under our own forest about last year, which is great for us, which goes along with the bill that got, hopefully will get passed here shortly, that gives us our own management of our own forest lands, which was good for us, plus our ceremonial hunting grounds. So once again, I'd like to thank you for having this and welcome me out to the tribe. And like I said, we really want to show you who we are and what we are. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon. Chairman Gary Burke of the Confederate Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation. I serve on the Board of Trustees of 9 members. I am the chairman of that Board of Trustees, along with Leo Stewart, the Vice Chairman, Aaron Hines, the Treasurer, Catherine Brigham, Secretary, Alan Crawford, General Counsel Chairman, Armin Minthorn, Member at Large, Justin Quimps, Member at Large, Bob Shippentar, Member at Large, Woodrow Starr, Member at Large. With me here today, I have the General Counsel Chairman, Alan Crawford, and Justin Quimps, and Aaron Hines. We came for the legislative doings they had this morning. It's a good thing to see and to hear. It was one of my first. I've never got to come for that event, but it was really good to see and to hear. We also are located in the northeast Oregon corner and the southwestern Oregon Washington corner. We have a treaty that was signed in 1855, June 9th, which is probably 160 years old. We still abide by those treaty rules and obligations that were signed 160 years ago. Since that time, we've, I guess you could say, struggling along, getting our economic development projects on the road, learning the new systems that were put upon us. And each year, 2 years, we have a new board that's elected by the General Council people membership. And today our workforce, 518 employed within the tribal government, 802 employed in Wild Horse Resort and Casino, 292 employed in the Cayuse Technologies, 51 employed at Arrowhead and Mission Market, total workforce of 1,612, 27% C2IR members, 11% other Indians, 62% non-Indians. That's nearly a $50 million annual payroll for the tribe. We have some economic development achievements, infrastructures in 1993, 1994, Wild Horse Casino, in 1995, a hotel, 1996, an RV park, 1997, a golf course, 1997, Temuska Cultural Institute, 2000, solid waste transfer station, 2001, Arrowhead Travel Plaza purchased, 2001, 2004, and 2006, casino expansions of Wild Horse. 2003 is Mission Market, 2006, Coyote Business Park, 2008, Cayuse Technologies, 2008 again, DaVita Blue Mountain Dialysis Clinic, 2009, Arrowhead Travel Plaza with McDonald's, 2010, Nikiawe Governance Center was built, 2011, Wild Horse Hotel, Theater, and Slot 4 expansion, 2012, United States Forest Service, Umatilla Supervisory's Office, Kenworth Sales, Coyote Retail Center, 2013, Reservation Enterprise Zone, 2014, SiteLink Conference hosted by the Coyote Business Park. We have also other types of economic diversity, Coyote Business Park, Wanapa Industrial Site, Cayuse Technologies, and Arrowhead Plaza. And we're looking for other businesses to come into our Coyote Business Park industrial sites. We're taking on people if they want to show up, but we haven't had no takers so far for quite some time. But within that structure, we have a charter school that's doing really good. But it's kind of the hardship that we're growing out of it now. We're growing pains of the charter school itself, and our education, our younger people are going out and getting educated at universities and colleges and coming back, and hopefully by another 10 years we'll have them all employed. With all that said, we do have hunting and fishing rights, usual in the custom sites. Hunting, gathering, traditional foods, medicines, public land within the ceded areas. The rights generally referred to as treaty reserved rights. Within those rights, we practice those rights and we protect them. So that's quite a bit of land, ceded areas that we share with Nez Perce, maybe Warm Springs, Yakima, but all those treaty tribes within there, before we even had treaties, we mingled with each other before then, shared songs, traded with the other treaty tribes. So we're seem to be doing okay so far in certain areas. Been trying to get a hold of people and agencies like yourself to come to the reservation to look at progress and to listen to the other board members that are there, that they have concerns also that they need to be heard. It's been, like I said, 160 years, and we've been here for a long time, even before the treaty. Still yet, agencies kind of push you to the side and until we stop them. Hey, we've got a treaty right here. What are you doing? You know, nobody told us we had to go and see you folks. How long have you been in business? And you should have checked all that before you even started your project. I'd hate to stop you, but I'm going to have to. Those kind of things are coming about. And since those times, there's been executive orders by in 1996-30. And there's also a presidential executive order. With those executive orders are consultations with tribes. And those seem to be still overlooked. And I've even been to the White House. I've been up to the Capitol in Washington. I've been to the Capitol here. And believe it or not, sometimes people ask me in these chairs here, could you explain the treaty to me? Okay. Our treaty has 11 articles of law. We share in common with neighboring people, whoever they are, non-Indians, Indians. We've had several acts on our treaty, allotment acts, Dawes acts, that took away a lot of our land and some of our rights. They turned it into private property, and it's still within the boundaries of the tribes. Now we're into a land buyback situation that the government has allowed us to do because of a Cobell Act, and there's other acts that have been misused, mismanaged. But we would like a lot of help if you guys could offer it up and just to come and visit and to see and to look around at the Confederate Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation exists still, and a lot of them always talk about treaties. Once you hear the word treaty, what comes to your mind? I've asked this to anybody. They think of Indians. Well, that's part of it, and it's true. The other half of that is the United States government. They made the treaty and the contract with us. That was 160 years ago. Now, somebody that can't remember that, I mean, there's laws there. What are the consequences for breaking federal laws? If I could get any kind of help to get us to let other agencies come and visit, such as yourselves, I would sure appreciate that. And you are invited to the Confederate Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation. Thank you.
Any questions right now for these two gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you. If I could, Rain, good to see you here. I just had a quick question. The last restoration gathering that you had, and I'm thinking the gatherings at the main property by the highway, not the the tribal headquarters. About how many people attended that gathering?
You're talking about our restoration, yeah, or you're talking about our powwow?
Well, the restoration.
Okay, the restoration. Well, we did, last year it was quite large because of our 30-year restoration. But I don't know.
I'm going to say there were 800 people in the room.
Oh yeah, at least it was totally full. So, yes.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll just also mention for the committee's benefit, whenever we get emails about self-service gasoline in Oregon, mm-hmm. I remind people that my district does have self-service gasoline.
Other questions? We may have some more by the time we're done.
Okay.
Well, I know, at least personally, I had two visits to the hotel, but I did not make enough time in my planning. It was just driving through an 84, and I knew I wanted to see the renovated hotel. And I'd stayed there a number of times in the past, but I'd heard wonderful things about the hotel, so I broke my trip up just so I could stay in the hotel for one night. And it is quite impressive, the expansion.
A good golf course there, too.
I saw it out the window. I just didn't leave any time for myself to do anything. So when I come out and spend some time, I'm in the IT world, so I'm particularly interested in seeing Cayuse and what they do there. And I will leave some time for golf this next time. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so did we get our meter feeder, Chair of the Warm Springs, back yet? No, not yet? Okay. And then was Dave Hatch here? Dave, you want to join us? That was Gary. And then how about Warren Baynard? Please. Gary, would you like to start?
I'm not the chair. The chair and the vice chair were both committed this afternoon, sure, and they asked me to attend. My name's Dave Hatch, and I'm Ike Martin's great-grandson. Our family's from the South of the River, North Fork of the South of the River. Our cemetery's up there on the North Fork, and we've got my direct family. There's five generations there now. My great grandfather was Coos, and but we are enrolled with the Confederated Tribes of the Sluts Indians. We're the largest employer in Lincoln County. We've got our own charter school. Well, it's not our own charter school, but we help a lot with our own Sluts charter school, and that was the school that earlier today Bud was referencing, that where we teach Athabascan language. Grade school through high school. When I was 1 year old, the tribe was terminated, as along with all the Western Oregon tribes. The Republican-controlled administration, federal administration, thought that was the best way to assimilate the tribal people. It was a failed experiment, and Fortunately, when I was 25 years old, the tribe was restored. And so it's brought a lot of good things. And when I, back in 1980, well, we've been restored a couple of years, I got to serve on tribal council. And we were so proud of our own having our own double-wide trailer, because that's where we could have our meetings down in the town of Siletz. And now if you go through Siletz, we've got state-of-the-art clinic, state-of-the-art administration building, beautiful community center. We're in the process. I'm the chairman of the Siletz Tribal Arts and Heritage Society. We're going to build a cultural center in the very near future. So we're doing a lot of good things. But one of the things we're most concerned about is all the change we've seen. Growing up on the south of the river, I'd go out fishing with Grandpa or my dad. And we'd go from the North Fork, we'd take the boat all the way out in the ocean, and we'd stay out most of the day because Grandpa never came in until we had three fish apiece. We had to get the fish box full. But all the way down, he'd say, this used to be here, this used to be there. We used to be able to catch the perch here. We used to be able to catch the flounder there. My dad told me about the ray he caught on the mudflats right there. And there's been tremendous change in our estuaries, and that's continued. And the oceans have changed a whole lot. And one of the things I knew that was related to was the loss of the sea otter. And so back in 2000, the tribe supported an effort that another group was worked on. We picked up the sea otter teeth from the middens up and down the Oregon coast, and working with a professor at Portland State University on a study that we funded, we extracted the DNA from the teeth of the sea otter, and we determined that the appropriate subspecies to bring back to Oregon is actually the subspecies that now lives in California. In the 1970s, there was an attempt to bring the animals from Alaska. I've forgotten the name of the island, but it was the one there where we were doing testing atomic weapons on that island. So they had to move the sea otter, and they distributed those animals between Vancouver Island, Washington, and Oregon. The Oregon population did not survive, and so that brought up the question, why not? And so we did determine that if there's a way to bring sea otter back, the appropriate animals to bring back are the southern sea otters. But there's a whole lot of federal, state regulations and difficulties in getting public support for something like that, or there was 8 years ago. And if anybody wants to revive that effort, we've got a good plan for how that might be done. But but we're still very, very concerned about the ocean. We think the hypoxia events that we've seen recently are related to ocean acidification. We agree with what we've heard from Oregon State University. And we're getting on board. We're going to work directly with ODF&W to study the clams in the Alsea, Yaquina, and Siletz Bays, because we want to help ODF&W make their study better. And we want to see what's happening. We won't be able to stop it, but we want to work with people to help make the changes we can. I think what the tribes offer is credibility. I think what we say is less likely to be censored than what we see with our scientists. And I think that our relationship with the federal government might require that they help keep our resources in a status where they belong, and so may be able to help leverage the support of the federal government to help do what we can to affect these bad changes that are on their way. One more plug I want to put in because of an elder that's in the back of the room. We would support taking lead out of ammo. We are anxious to see the condor come back to Oregon, and we think that taking the lead out of our ammo will be a very important part of that. And I'll quit there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Chief Warren Brainerd of the Coos Loram Paasayus Law Tribe, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to share with you about our tribe. The goal of economic self-determination is important to my tribe and to our people. The Tribal Council invests time and financial resources pursuant to this goal. We have invested our political capital in asking you to make decisions about state policy that help us pursue economic self-determination. For example, House Bill 2148A will clarify the tax treatment of permanent structures built on tribal lands. This committee started the ball rolling on that bill back in February. Today, the bill rests on the governor's desk waiting for her approval. That's not quite right because the governor signed it last night at a reception for tribal members. I have one of the pins that signed it.
All right.
As important as economic development is to the tribe, I want to talk to you about another part of the tribe's interest that is equal or greater to the importance of my people. The tribe's spiritual and cultural life is at the heart of my people. I want to talk to you about our spiritual and cultural life. Like the government that you serve, the government of the Confederated Tribes of Coos Loram Paasayus Law Tribe is established by a written constitution. Both constitutions express the people's most important values. The Oregon Constitution begins with a Bill of Rights highlighting some of the most important values and principles of state government. The Tribal Constitution also highlights the principles and values most cherished by our people. My ancestors were sustained for 10,000 years and more before the contact with your ancestors by the land, the water, the animals of the region, encompassing about 1.6 million acres in the watershed of the Coos, Umpqua, and the Siuslaw River. Our Constitution reflects our reverence for this land and its resources. Like the Constitution of the United States, our tribe constitution begins with a preamble. Our tribe's constitution lists six specified purposes. Three of the six relate directly or indirectly to the spiritual and cultural identity. One command the tribal government is to preserve and promote our cultural, religion, and historical beliefs. That commandment is expressed in several other parts of our Constitution. Our Constitution requires a supermajority for certain decisions affecting our most spiritual and cultural values. Many decisions may be made by a simple majority vote by the Tribal Council. But when it comes to a decision affecting our land and its natural resources, the approval of a supermajority of the entire membership is required. Our land and its resources are at the heart of our cultural and spiritual values. It is not surprising that our Constitution addresses these topics. For example, the tribe cannot give up control on any part of the very small amount that we still control of our ancestral lands unless 3/4 of the membership approve in a vote which 35% of the total membership cast votes. Approval of the same supermajority would be required by our Constitution before the tribe could agree to any diminishment, negotiation, or settlement of any hunting, fishing, or gathering rights possessed or claimed by the tribe. The Tribal Constitution highlights the importance of the culture and spiritual practice in another way. These parts of our tribal constitution are of a special importance to me because they create the office I hold, the description of the duties of the chief. The position of the chief is established as a voting member of the tribal council, but only the tribal chief is assigned duties in relation to the spiritual and cultural life of the tribe. I am specifically charged with conducting the tribal ceremonies. Our annual salmon ceremony is one of the most significant ceremonies in the tribe's spiritual and cultural life. Without salmon, our ancestors would not have survived and prospered. Even though necessity no longer connects us, our spiritual and cultural connection to salmon has not diminished. Our Constitution underscores the importance of that connection by specifying the date on which our salmon ceremony is to be held each year. It commands our attention to the spiritual and cultural purpose of the ceremony by stating that no official business shall take place at that the ceremony. And I'd like to say that I'm the author of that clause, and there's great reason that it was there. My tribe, like other, invests resources in cultural resources and protection department. In the context of my tribe's law and procedures, the chief is assigned specified duties to assist in the tribe-to-tribe and tribe-to-state coordination when there is culturally significant sites for human remains of tribal heritage where tribal heritage are threatened. Oregon and the federal government have adopted statutes significantly improving the protection of the cultural sensitive location. The Legislative Commission on Indian Services have helped refine the state laws protecting cultural sensitive sites. I thank the current and former members of that commission for the many occasions when the tribal concerns and interests have been brought to the front. The tribe and the state have made great strides towards sustaining our cultural and spiritual values. It is a testament to the progress we've all made that I am sitting before you as a representative of a political sovereignty, fully recognized by the federal government and fully engaged in mutual benefit relationship with the state of Oregon. Today, our tribe is the largest employer in Western Lane County. Our police department helps protect Oregonians up and down the highway between Florence and our headquarters in Coos Bay. And we are gradually improving our capacity to protect and support the tribe's cultural and spiritual values. For 40 years, the Legislative Commission on Indian Services have been tending the relationships between the state and the tribes. The progress we've made towards sustaining the tribe's spiritual and cultural values is built in part on the commission's efforts. I am pleased to be here to celebrate this anniversary and to share some of the tribe's perspectives. Thank you.
Any questions for these gentlemen? Great, thank you.
Thank you.
So I've got Taylor Tupper, the Klamath, and did we find any of our Warm Springs? Would you like to?
Two ladies.
No, he didn't. He certainly could. But. Taylor, would you like to start?
Absolutely. Waklisi. Gayosasis Laminawatch, Gayosasis Taylor Tupper. In my language, that means thank you and hello greetings. My name is Laminawatch. That's a name given to me by my father, Rayson Tupper, and that means Thunder Horse. My family are rodeo and ranch people, and we live in southern Oregon all of our lives. I'm also Mualt Dalkni, which is Modoc. I'm a member of the Modoc tribes, which incorporated into the Klamath tribes when we were moved from our homelands to the Klamath Reservation. And if any of you don't know where that's in southern Oregon, northern California, right near Crater Lake. One of the things about the Klamath tribes is we were also a treaty tribe. We signed our treaty in 1864, and then we were terminated in 1954 with five of the other tribes in the state of Oregon. It's been 29 years since we were restored in 1986, and we are still, our Klamath County is still is the second poorest areas in the nation for rural areas. However, the Klamath tribes does contribute at a minimum over $30 million back into our economy. We have over 55 programs that service the Klamath County area, and we were the only tribe to be restored without a land base. So we are 638 contract tribe, and we do public law 280. So what we do is we work directly with the both city of Chiloquin government, Klamath County governments, city officials, state police, and county police for service and protection within those. And the Klamath Tribes is currently supporting a tax levy, 8,100, that would keep the jail system open and work directly with Sheriff Scraw of Klamath County. One of the things that really is important, and I was sent here by Chairman Gentry, who wasn't able to be here today due to a death in his family. I myself serve on tribal council. I've been on our tribal council for 2 years, and I've served under the last 9 tribal governments for 22 years as aide to tribal government and public relations director for the Klamath Tribes. One of the things that I sit on a secondary committee for economic development, and I was a former chair of that committee, and I'm also on our energy development committee. One of the things that we need and we are looking for in Klamath County is a diversified use for power, so that we can start to work with our Oregon Institute of Technology regarding geothermal energy and the new project that they have for their solar panels. That's something that the Klamath Tribes is working directly with some of our students, and we have one of our students on the Native American program, which is the president of that program. He'll be graduating here soon, and then he'll be coming to work, hopefully, for the Klamath Tribes. Another thing that is super important to the Klamath Tribes, and I'm sure you might already know about it, is our Senate Bill 133. Been working on that process since 2001, and it's the largest dam removal, salmon recovery, and water effort in the nation. And we're working directly with the Yurok, Karuk, and Lower River tribes, along with 42 other entities, to finalize those agreements. We believe that these agreements will help the stability of our county and the stability of the ranchers and the farmers that work within our area, and many of them are also tribal members. When we talk about water and recovery and restoration within the Wainema Fremont National Forest, which is the homelands of the Klamath Tribes, and even though we don't have a land base that's called a reservation, we retain hunting, fishing, gathering, and water rights within the former reservation. So we work directly with the Forest Service, and we have memorandums of agreement, and we hope to, in the future, have practices where we can implement our forest management plan. I didn't come with a prepared speech. I'm honored to be here. I'm honored that I've gotten to work with Karen. For we were just discussing 20 years. She's been here 20 years, and I've worked for my tribe for 22. And it's always refreshing to come here and know that the Commission on Indian Services is here to help assist the tribes. And I work directly with the 8 other tribes. And I thank you for your time and your commitment back to the tribes. And if you need anything from the Klamath Tribes, you're always welcome to come down to our area. Visit any of our services and our restoration celebration, which is held the 4th week in August. Thank you.
Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Evelyn Pat. I'm the vice chair with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm just going to give this off the top of my head, too. I wasn't really prepared for this, but I want to thank you, thank each of you for taking the time to listen to the tribes. And Warm Springs is, as you may know, we're located in Central Oregon. We are bands of the Washko and the Warm Springs bands who came from the Columbia River. And in 1855, when we did the treaty, when our forefathers did the treaty, those bands were moved to Central Oregon. And right now, there are 644,000 acres of the reservation land, and we have 5,200 members, tribal members. And after the treaty was done in 1855, then the northern, a band of Paiutes came when they disbanded from the Yakima Reservation where they were held. And they, as I understood, they were traveling through to go to southern Oregon, and they camped there at Warm Springs and just end up staying there. So that's how they got to Warm Springs. Our major revenue for the tribe back then when we started, back in 1938, the tribe organized. We are under a constitution and bylaws and a corporate charter. And the governing body, which is the tribal council, is made up of 11 members, and three of them are the chiefs. The Warm Springs chief is Delvis Heath Sr., and Alfred Smith Jr. is the Wasco chief, and Joe Moses is the Northern Paiute chief. And the eight, they sit on council permanently, and the other are elected into office, the eight members. Warm Springs, we have enterprises, the Warm Springs Forest Products Industries, which right now, as you know how the timber market is very low. So right now it's not really a booming business. We also have the Caneta Resort. Of course, you probably know. I know that most of the people from, when I go to a store in Portland, they don't know Warm Springs, but they know Caneta. So, but anyway, we also have the Warm Springs Power and Water Enterprise, which they are over the Rereg Dam and the Pelton and Round Butte dams. We also have a casino, which is located on Highway 26. And also we have the Warm Springs Credit Enterprise, which is a loan company that gives loans to the tribal members. There's also the museum at Warm Springs, and the museum opened in 1993 and has been a good place to preserve our cultural artifacts. And the most of the displays, they are the artifacts from the three tribes, and they do various activities in the community. Within the tribal organization, we have various departments. There are the natural resources, which is probably the largest within the organization. There's the the health and human services branch. Let's see, who else is there? I'm just drawing a blank right now, but there are various departments within the organization. As I heard one of the gentlemen mention about the employment, at one time, Warm Springs was the biggest employer of Central Oregon. We employed many, many, many people. We recently, The tribe went in half with the 509J school district, which our students attend in Madras. Madras is 15 miles away from the reservation. And we did have the Warm Springs Elementary School, which kindergarten through fifth grade attended. And then just recently we had the school built where the tribe paid half, and then the school district paid the other half to have the school built. And the grades are from kindergarten to the eighth grade. And this is really has been a good positive thing for Warm Springs, you know, to have now the kids that attend, it's called the Warm Springs Academy. The kids who attend there, they form their own sports teams, you know, and they had a football team that traveled and played their other, you know, other areas. And it's really helped our students to be able to play in the sports in their own team, and to have a school, you know, to the eighth grade there in Warm Springs has really been helpful for our students. So I can't think of anything else right now. So
great. Any questions for these two? So one that I had, Taylor, I know that there is interest in some more acquisition, some forest land acquisition, I think in kind of southern Deschutes and northern Klamath. I'm not sure exactly which tracts in particular. And then relatively recently, the landowner sold to, I think, some Singapore-based entity. And so I know the state would like to help facilitate the tribe's goals there, but do you have any sense of, has there been contact made with the new landowner? And I just haven't had a chance to get updated what their plans are, if any, that we know of.
Yes, absolutely. I'm on the water team, which is a ad hoc committee of the tribal council. And we also have a technical team that's another part of that whole entire process. And what we're currently doing is, yes, the Mazama Tree Farm, which was part of the water settlements, and this legislation was sold, and that was part of the 90,000 acres that was promised to the Klamath tribes as part of the settlement, which was part of this Senate Bill 133. What we're currently in negotiations with federal government, the Forest Service, and the Klamath tribes, and our own tribal membership is seeking other lands that would be a counterpart to those lands that were lost. We have a meeting coming up with the Klamath tribal members on May 30th to disclose some of the lands that we're looking at. And I can't tell you exactly what lands those are, but we have a resolution, and we passed a motion at our last general council meeting last month that we would seek lands to recover for those lands that were lost.
Yeah, that's helpful.
So that it wouldn't hinder the Senate bill.
Yeah, and I think we've got two of those Senate bills, if not more, up next, I think, in 5 days from now in this committee. Next Tuesday in this committee. So it's helpful to have you. It's timely to have you here to have a little discussion about that in advance. Okay. Other questions? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And did I miss anybody? We weren't totally sure if Burns Paiute was going to be able to stay this late in the couple days, so I think we lost. And then Cow Creek. Did we just land Scott? We lost Scott. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else here to testify? Sometimes we have a sign-up sheet, but today I didn't have the sign-up sheet. Would you like to join us?
Sure.
Sure.
Good afternoon. My name is Orvi Danzuk. I'm with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I sit on the tribal council there for the last couple of years. And, you know, one of the things, just to let you know real quick, my background is in forestry. And, you know, growing up, my as our vice chair announced, we have three chiefs. One of them is my uncle. One of them had been my grandpa. My uncle was on here for 34 years. My mother was on here for a few terms. So I grew up in politics, even though at the time I always thought, you know, I'm going to stay as far away from that as possible. As you can see by my sitting here before you, I wasn't successful in that. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. What I will say is a good thing is growing up and hearing a lot of those discussions, I heard a lot of talk about how the state and the tribes didn't work together. They were in opposition. So I just wanted to come here and thank you for, you know, for hosting this. And hopefully we can host one at our reservation as well. And it sounds like there's a need and a desire for the other tribes to have you visit as well. We're always looking for opportunities to partner with people because, you know, ultimately we should be working together. And, you know, the fact that you're working on rural problems and you're working with water issues, I mean, that's huge. Right now we're trying to deal with some, you know, the water bottling plants. We have water shortages. We're at between 2 and 5% of our snowpack right now, expecting another high fire year, which is not a good thing. We are transitioning from a natural resources base where we relied heavily on timber for another years, and now we're transitioning. You mentioned that you're an IT person. One of the couple of things that I'm really excited about is the fact that we, in 2010 or 2011, we established the Warm Springs Telecom. So we have our own telephone company now that's established. A person from the Southwest who helped, he came up to work with that. And what that has also been coupled with is unmanned aerial systems. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of folks. We're one of only a few designations. There's only three in Oregon, one off of Tillamook, mm-hmm. one on the Warm Springs Reservation, and one in Boardman. And, you know, I'm excited about that because we have a few of those folks that are, you know, coming on board with that. They're coming to start doing some testing, and it's really exciting. And it is for me, especially because I'm the forest manager also. This year we're going to get our first flight over an actual fire. There was too many. We had to work a lot of things out with the FAA, a lot of safety issues. But one of the other things I talk about is, you know, some of our water, you know, of course, with all the rural areas we have now, we relied heavily on the BIA to help us out with some of those. As you know, with the state and with everywhere else, nobody's flush with money anymore. So they realize they have a trust responsibility to the tribe, but they don't have the money to do it. One of the things we could put in place is new water infrastructure. Putting meters on. We're realizing that there's other grants we could become qualified for if we could put meters on them. But we have so many breaks, that only solves a part of the problem. So, you know, since this is part of your committee, I don't know if it's appropriate for it to be here, but that is something that we're facing now. And also, you know, just coupling a lot of our infrastructure towards new economic development on the reservation. There's advantages. There can be tax advantages for corporations to come on the reservation. And it doesn't just benefit us. So, you know, I would say that. It doesn't just benefit the tribe. It benefits that community, the people that, you know, the folks here in this building represent. So I just wanted to add a couple of those things. And, you know, we're trying to work towards fiscal responsibility where we're getting, you know, we get grants, but we don't want to just completely depend on grants because then we're falling under somebody else's guidelines. We want to get something in place to build our own. We had an opportunity with that with our social services program where we get a grant for a few years and then we start billing on it and we're able to be self-sustainable. That's what we want to work towards. And if there's opportunities within your committee for us to do that, we'd be glad to hear from you about that. And like I said, we weren't prepared. I wasn't prepared. You know, our vice chair was a last-minute thing that we just heard about. So just wanted to invite you out. We have our Treaty Day celebration coming up at the end of June. So June 26th, we have a dignitary dinner, and we can extend an invitation to all of you to come. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we have our Treaty Day celebration on the Friday. We have a Governor's Dignitary Dinner, and we'd like to extend an invitation for you to come down for that. If you want to couple that with a meeting with us, with our group on that Friday before the dinner, that'd be great. However we can work something out, look at the timing of it. But Once again, I just want to thank you for allowing us to come here and meet with you, and I look forward to future meetings with you. Thank you.
Vice Chair Helm.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here, and I think it's a really exciting opportunity that you have with the unmanned aerial vehicle work.
Yes.
Can you help me understand whether that program on the Warm Springs is connected to the FAA programs?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It falls under a branch. It falls under the Alaska region.
Okay.
And so we are tied in with that. It's actually the FAA. They're working in conjunction with the testers, because last year we had an opportunity. We've had five large fires. We've hosted five large fires, but we had, I know just on one of the fires, we had 11 aircraft, including some of the National Guard helicopters were there. Some of the Chinooks and Blackhawks were there. And so having some of those unmanned aerial systems sounded very inviting, but trying to coordinate that, nobody was ready for it yet. This year, we're going to host the first one in early June. We're hoping before the Intertribal Timber Council National Symposium. We're supposed to have that first flight, and then we're reporting out on a group at the symposium.
That sounds great.
Follow it.
Yeah, follow it. Is there any, I have heard that the FAA program for unmanned aerial vehicles is very cumbersome. It's very bureaucratic, and the full potential for these test areas is we've hardly scratched the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you have any more freedom with your sovereign status?
Yeah, I would say
beyond
we do.
Those and regulations?
Yeah, I would say we do, and they've been very cooperative. They've worked with us very closely so far, and we were lucky we got an individual out of Corvallis who's been working in that. He was the president of the VDOS. He's a president of VDOS. He was president of I'm missing the name of it right now, but anyhow, he's been very helpful with us in working through the same things you're talking about. And we've had a couple other two that have come in that they've been real helpful working with us, so we're appreciative of that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Well, I can definitely recommend the governor's dinner and several of the events around Paimsha. I think I made it about 4 or 5 years in a row, but I missed either the last one or two, so I don't want to miss any more. I also do recall, if I remember right, though, that I think Michael always has to leave, and there's is it Coquille's that is at the same time? So I wrote down on my calendar the other one. I thought, okay, now I'm going to have to figure out. I may be carpooling with some people who do both,
yeah.
I know, and I may have to work that out this time. Okay, any further questions? Okay, great. Thank you.
Leave these for you.
Yeah, please. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes. Highly recommended event. Yes, sir, did you?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Kiesling, and 35 years ago I had the honor of representing the United States on the Olympic team. And I live at Tillamook Falls, which is one of the most significant Native American sites, gathering sites in southern Oregon, where we're in the process of building an Olympic whitewater course. And here with Grandma Agnes Baker Pilgrim, who's the oldest living Takelma. It's the site of the Takelma salmon ceremony, where it's a several thousand years old, where all the tribes came and gathered together for peace, which is just like the Olympics. I'm here because a couple of things. One is that Senate Bill 5225, I believe it is to help fund this. It's rural economic development, $90,000 to help build an Olympic course. Be a lot better than the one in Bend, more powerful, much more exciting, and really good for the town of Gold Hill, which desperately needs it. But the reason I'm here speaking today is because in working on this for the last 10 years, I've become very acquainted with the Native story, and we actually took Grandma Aggie with an Olympic gold medalist, myself and others, to the story chair in a raft. This is taking a 90-year-old woman down a Class 4 rapid to an ancient seat where her ancestors sat and caught the first salmon. I mean, these incredibly powerful, important stories being told at this place. And it's the place where all the tribes came together The record is everybody for 100 miles, but I think all the tribes. And what we're hoping to do is to gather all nine tribes at this place, which is it has the potential. It's between Crater Lake and the Oregon Caves. So, it's a big tourist thing. And it's anyway, I'm just calling it to your attention and also calling it to the tribal leaders to come and play a part, because this is taking time. It should take time. We don't want to do it wrong. But it's really important that it gets done for the people of Gold Hill, Rogue Valley. It's a potential national tourist draw. Anyway, thank you so much.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I had not been familiar with it, but I'm looking it up now. I'm on the website here. Okay, thank you.
Could you have her?
She'll copy it for us. Okay. Sorry, I just think that I recognize from the website, Grandma's on the website as well. So she's kind of a celebrity, and we're very happy you're here as well. Okay. Anybody else? Great. Well, as I mentioned, this was a first attempt at this effort. I'm not entirely sure that it makes sense to time it up at the very end of a long couple days for folks. Next time we may try it at the beginning or somewhere in the middle, because I know there were some long drives home, and so at least in one case we knew we might not be able to hear from Burns Paiute, particularly because of we're at the end of a long couple days. But we do appreciate everybody who did stay and spend some time with us, and I've got some follow-up notes and also some pretty exciting invitations to respond to in the near future. And so thank you again for coming. And with that, we will close our informational hearing. And colleagues, we've got a couple of bills up next Tuesday. We had the Klamath bills and one work session planned. So if you can't stay for a while, let me know, and we'll get the work session done, you know, when we can get a quorum.
Tuesday,
yeah.
I'm golfing in Umatilla.
On Tuesday, yeah. Great. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting and cut off the microphone.